I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold Blooded, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern. Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one case, but almost a dozen. Listen to Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, from Wonder Media Network, I'm Jenny Kaplan, host of Womanica, a daily podcast that introduces you to the fascinating lives of women history has forgotten. We've always been intrigued by stories of disappearances, whether it's a fraudster from the 17th century who kept evading the authorities, or a novelist who taunted the Nazis and faked her own death. We all want to know, what happened next? To find out, listen to Womanica on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in LA, and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
iHeart Podcast Update. This week on your free iHeartRadio app.
Fodor's Guide to Espionage, a 60s-era spy story of the world's first and greatest travel writer, Eugene Fodor, as he jet sets around the globe. Tongue Unbroken, Season 2. This podcast explores complex concepts of identity, resilience, erasure, and genocide. Table for Two, Season 2. Think of the show as a deconstructed Oscar party in podcast form. Each episode takes place over the romance of a meal and feels like you're seated next to a different guest at that dinner. Hear these podcasts and more on your free iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Now here's a highlight from Coast to Coast AM on iHeartRadio.
Paul Stonehill, I want to jump to your tales, your recent report about this area called Karelia, which is, I guess, borders Finland. One-fourth of it is covered by lakes, 60,000 lakes, but it's what goes in and out of those lakes that really caught your interest. Tell us about it.
Well, the Karelia region is, well, mostly it was Finland before, a very interesting part of Russia. It has ancient history going back to a few thousands of years, and since 1920s, there is a lake, Vedel Ozero, and there is a village nearby, and they have been observing strange celestial phenomena. Bright orange spheres that are basically are exploding in front of their eyes, so to say, flying around. For 3 hours, for example, recently, they observed similar phenomenon, bright shining sphere flying over them. What's interesting is that since 1928, they have this phenomena, because there was an object, I recall it was a cylindrical object that fell into that lake, and the KGB of the time became interested in Kevadea. They surrounded the area. They forgot. They told the people not to forget about it, not to talk to. But people talk to, because, you know, for decades, something appears over their area. And multicolored circles flying in the sky. But so also, again, spheres. And I'm going a lot by memory. There was a strange creature observed. I think it was about a meter high. It was skinny. It had a pronounced head, protruding head. And what's interesting, it was dressed in something like a space suit that you could call it, or like the divers were. And the people got used to it, because it wasn't bothering them. And of course, the government is trying, and the scientists trying to say that, no, you're seeing special light effects, maybe because of the technological experiments or new testing of new equipment, maybe aircraft or drones, but we didn't have that in 1928, so that doesn't work. People in the area talk about very unusual, mysterious stories, and observing a number of flight, like a raspberry-colored flight, a sphere flying around, and it scared people, but it didn't harm them. that gigantic light, the gigantic sphere separated into smaller spheres, which is common to many reports about UFOs in the area. And this is going on. I think in 2012, there was a very interesting sighting around that lake. And it's like small yellow triangles were falling down and other geometrical shapes and spheres. And it comes from a number of people about that lake. But this is not the only lake in Karelia that has had this experience. You got to understand the whole area going towards Leningrad or now St. Petersburg and the lakes like Lake Valaam, like Lake Ladoga and Onega have had stories about UFOs and USOs continuously. And Russian researchers have paid attention, such as Mikhail Gerstein and others. They're paying attention to what's going on and trying to explain it. But really, there is no explanation. If we go back to the 18th century, in 1716, there was an observation recorded by Dutch diplomats / spy about celestial battle over St. Petersburg, basically, when cloud-like but solid formations basically ran into each other and there was a celestial fight. And it was observed by the Russian Navy. Admiral Sinyavin, as I recall, he also saw it from the other side. So this area is full of interesting phenomenon. And I urge you to pay attention to the Gulf of Finland and the Baltic Sea itself, and of course the Russian territories. Now, Petrozavodsk is not that far away from there. And in 1977, they had very interesting sightings correlated with the launch of Soviet satellites, but they had sightings before, during, and after. So you can't hang it all on Soviet satellite testing. There was a strange jellyfish-like object over Petrozavodsk in Karelia, not far away from St. Petersburg, and the biophysical effect on people was very pronounced. They had gloominess, they felt bad, they had physical reaction to it. What's interesting is that the windows in the houses and the buildings around the city had small apertures all of a sudden opening. There was more than that. I just want to underline to you that Karelia and the nearby areas are very interesting. And those who study my research, they will also find out that this is the area, not far away from there, like Kola Peninsula and around Solovetsky Islands, where the ancient labyrinths, like the Minoan Kingdom, unusual labyrinths or mazes are found, which are inexplicable. Some of them are also found in nearby Sweden and so forth. How it all ties in together, I don't know, but it's out there.
You know, Petrozavodsk, that incident, it's been explained by debunkers as, oh yeah, that's just that jellyfish, that's because of the rocket launch. But I've got those photos. Colonel Boris Sokolov, the head of the Ministry of Defense UFO investigation, gave them to me. He said that there was something else going on, and that incident is what prompted the Ministry of Defense to establish its 10-year-long UFO study that encompassed the entire USSR military and collected thousands of cases. That was what really kicked it off.
Absolutely. That's where the Setka came from. This was what scared the Soviet Union. And people need to understand, it wasn't like Brezhnev said, okay, we're going to start a new program. No, it was the Military Industrial Commission that got together, and the Communist Party leaders authorized it to start the research. And the Setka research, which you had brought documents about, which is great, because there's not that much of them. There are some, but they're still classified, most of them. But something is out there. This program lasted for 13 years. They had used the entire Soviet armed forces to collect information and bring forth report. Do you understand the situation mentally, what we had in the Soviet Union? You cannot talk about UFOs. UFOs are bourgeois inventions or nonsense, and that's how it's accepted in other countries too. But at the same time, you had, meaning military personnel, had to collect information about UFOs and USOs and send them to two special centers for the analysis of such information. And the incredible cases came into their possession. Kazakhstan, something happened in Arkhangelsk, the so-called Arkhangelsk dust. I still don't know what they refer to. They had captured something, and I don't mean captured, you know, I would say something came into their nets, collection nets. I know we talked about the area not far, again, Karelia. Well, let's talk about the 1987 case in Manchegorsk, which Gorbachev knew about because he changed his itinerary to go see a small shuttle-like object that was delivered to the Setka Research Center because it was discovered outside a military facility, again, not far from Leningrad. They tried to open it, the Soviet military researchers. It was a small shuttle-like object made for little people, so to say. They were able to get in. They messed around. They broke a few, I think one piece for sure. And then they had radiation burns on their hands, those military researchers. Whatever was inside was not made for human beings like we are, but for smaller statue. They couldn't understand what the controls were. Finally, they studied the object. They rolled it out, and then it either exploded and vanished or disappeared, causing damage to the military facility as well. This is also in the Setka files, one of the least understood cases, but it's out there. And again, Gorbachev knew about it. This was the Setka program that you brought documents about to the West and that very few people talk about here.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpert.
It's just a shame, you know, that they took him from us.
Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, knocking on doors, uncovering new evidence, including the DNA of a potential killer.
My name is Danny Smith. I'm a detective with the Miramar Police Department. This is Scott Weinberger. We're actually reopening an old case, and your name came up.
Untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one murder, but almost a dozen.
I thought they were going to kill me, so I kept my mouth shut, and I didn't say anything. All these years, I didn't say anything.
Listen to Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV true crime podcast, To Live and Die in L.A. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world, and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turned sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
iHeart Podcast Update. This week on your free iHeartRadio app. Fodor's Guide to Espionage, a 60s-era spy story of the world's first and greatest travel writer, Eugene Fodor, as he jet sets around the globe. Tongue Unbroken Season 2. This podcast explores complex concepts of identity, resilience, erasure, and genocide. Table for Two Season 2. Think of the show as a deconstructed Oscar party in podcast form. Each episode takes place over the romance of a meal and feels like you're seated next to a different guest at that dinner. Hear these podcasts and more on your free iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Before we leave Karelia, there's one of the details that you reported I thought was really interesting. So the scientists try to explain some of these incidents away. Oh, no, though, that's just the northern lights that these rural people are seeing. And there's a newspaper who reached out some of the locals, a teacher who lives there and spent her whole life there, responded and said, look, these are yellow triangles, rectangles, and spheres. It's not the northern lights. She starts telling very detailed stories about the things they had seen, including about creatures. And I like the idea that the people who lived there, living out in a rural area, weren't going to take that, and they fought back.
People are fighting back. Through the whole history, even of the Tsarist Russia and the Soviet Union, people who comprised the country were fighting back. We had resistance all this time, and I honor those people. And it can take many forms. You can go out and bring leaflets. You can form underground parties, or you can just do what Solzhenitsyn asked people to do. Do not lie. When you don't lie, this is first form of resistance, and people do speak out. Even about this, and I've continuously read responses to the articles in Russian media like Komsomolskaya Pravda, and that brings me a lot of information, because people say, look, I was at such and such age, I was here and there, and this is what I had seen, and I want to talk about it. The situation right now is that people who had lived in the Soviet Union are dying out. We're all getting older. And kudos to those military officers and commanders who come out and say, I don't want to be silent anymore. Even though I gave oath of non-disclosure, I do want to talk about what I had seen. Military, like admirals and generals, they say, what do we have to lose? I want to talk about it. And that's how we get very interesting information. And I put it in my research as well about cosmonauts or about admirals who said, well, we were on a secret mission by Greenland, and we saw this object burst through the ice from down below, from under the surface of the sea. It burst through the ice, and it was, it was a missile-like object, or it was a UFO, this and that. But we knew that it was no Americans doing that. And some Russian generals that I bring in information from, like one who was fighting the Chernobyl disaster, helping people survive. He was a real hero. And he said, we are surrounded. We are controlled by aliens. After many years, he was a completely sane guy. He said that. He says, you don't understand the extent of the phenomenon, but I'll speak out about it. And nobody can silence them.
You also report of Russian media reporting on UFOs over China. And this happened February 14th, Valentine's Day. UFOs were spotted near the border of Russia and China. I don't know if you recall the details off the top of your head or whether you have that on your computer, but what do you know?
It was reported in Russian newspaper, and yes, in northeastern China, right next to the Russian border, that the UFOs lights were going in and out, and the Chinese people down below took photographs, and some tried to explain it by being mask satellites, but they knew it wasn't like that. It wasn't that, and it actually made to the Russian, I can't pronounce the name of the newspaper right now, but it made to the Chinese newspapers, and there were interesting photographs out there. But the date, February 14, is the same date that there were sightings in Russia. So there must be a correlation somewhere. Has it happened in other parts of the world? I am sure, over the United States probably. But this was no balloons, no satellites, just strange lights that appeared over China. And I think from world media, there were reports of maybe 1 week before, there was an object sighted over Shandong province, right next to the sea. It was familiar to me. There was an object, UFO, sighted in that area as well, which could not be explained.
How hard is it for you to get information out of China? I don't assume that you speak or read Chinese, but so you would rely on Russian publications to report what's going on in China, or how do you get the information?
There are very cool newspapers out there, like South China, I believe South China East Reporter in English, yeah. Very interesting ones. But usually I rely on Russian information because they're very cognizant of China. And their neighbor is of concern to them as well, and vice versa. So they are reporting very diligently on events in China. And it's not tabloid newspapers. Really interesting. Also, I read a lot of Russian regional newspapers, and they do have interesting news in the Far East. And we talked for years about Dalnygorsk, for example, you know, newspapers from that area, from the Primorsky Krai or the Maritime Province. And the Russians also have pretty good, accurate, you know, newspaper coverage from newspapers like Komsomolskaya Pravda, Argumenty and Fakty, of their neighbors' UFO activities.
And how much freedom does the Chinese media have to report this? You mentioned of Western newspapers that are printed. I think that South China newspaper is, I think, kind of Hong Kong and maybe Macau. But the Chinese people, do they get to read about UFO incidents? Is there an intense interest in the topic there?
There has been a tremendous intense interest in UFOs. And they are using the Chinese government, I believe, is sponsoring UFO organizations and researchers. There are debunkers as well, but mostly they are very serious about the research. I remember from my lectures in Hong Kong in 2012, and how, you know, the reception I had. And but nowadays, I think it's even more serious because they want to know what's going on in correlation with the United States and so forth. But the Chinese UFO, the history of ancient aliens and UFO sightings in China goes back, I would say, at least 6,000 years to the days of the Yellow Emperor and the legends of his helpers, which could be described as modern-day robots and machinery. And it goes through the centuries. And we don't know everything that the Chinese know. They have ways to conceal information, especially in modern Red China or People's Republic of China. Nevertheless, there are organizations, I'm not sure how active, of ufologists, and they had tried to reach out to others in the world. I don't know what kind of action it was, but then it was clamped down, something, it stopped. However, within China, there is reporting on UFOs, and it kind of Russian media finds out about it because they have Chinese-speaking people, and that's how we find out.
We need to figure out how to go there and crack the code and get some of the UFO secrets that the Chinese must have, Paul. We'll talk about that off the air.
Listen to more Coast to Coast AM every weeknight at 1 a.m. Eastern, and go to coasttocoastam.com for more.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold Blooded, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern. Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one case, but almost a dozen. Listen to Cold Blooded, the Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, from Wonder Media Network, I'm Jenny Kaplan, host of Womanica, a daily podcast that introduces you to the fascinating lives of women history has forgotten. We've always been intrigued by stories of disappearances. Whether it's a fraudster from the 17th century who kept evading the authorities, or a novelist who taunted the Nazis and faked her own death, we all want to know, what happened next? To find out, listen to Womanica on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in LA, and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
iHeart Podcast Update. This week on your free iHeartRadio app. Fodor's Guide to Espionage, a 60s-era spy story of the world's first and greatest travel writer, Eugene Fodor,
as he jet sets around the globe. Tongue Unbroken Season 2. This podcast explores complex concepts of identity, resilience, erasure, and genocide. Table for Two Season 2. Think of the show as a deconstructed Oscar party in podcast form. Each episode takes place over the romance of a meal and feels like you're seated next to a different guest at that dinner. Hear these podcasts and more on your free iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.